And we are live. This is Drew Lamb from Double Cross Radio, and we are on UCY.TV. I'm joined by my co-host, Chuck Horton. And I think we are broadcasting. I didn't hear our bumper music there, so we might have just come in just right on the edge of it. So if you guys are done fighting with Honey Radiance, let us know how the audio is going there. You guys getting any audio there?
How about me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you good.
All right.
I can kind of tell you're not running your headset, but it sounds pretty good. You're on your laptop right now.
Yeah, and I think I'm eventually going to do the show from this. This I'm at my store right now.
Yeah, I'm in my office at the farm.
I can just bring my whole setup over here, and it's the only thing I use it for is this show. It'll be good. So anyway, we got a little bit less prepared than normal, but I have some interesting stories to share today.
And I have a story to share as well.
All right.
So we've just yeah, we don't have a guest tonight. It's just you and me. I haven't been able to talk to you much all week except on Facebook.
No.
So it's good. And we are broadcasting. We're getting feedback from the chat, and like to shout out to our wonderful listeners, Dominic, Damn Defiant, our best friend of the whole wide world, Honey Radiance. It's just not Thursday without Honey Radiance in the chat. Hopper HB, Joe Friday, Jules, Keeper of the Republic, and Road Dog. And we have several anonymous listeners here. So thanks for tuning in, you guys. And hopefully you find this episode interesting. And Chuck and I are just here trying to run businesses and make a living, and that's really, really challenging. And so that's pretty much what we'll be talking about, these things here and current events. And both of us are still here and working. And so I've been setting up a new aquaponics system all day today, and working on some systems that will increase my microgreen production and also wheatgrass production. I'm going to start doing wheatgrass over here, so building whole new systems for that. And once we're done, I'll put some videos together and get it up on the YouTube channel. So Chuck, I'll pass the mic over to you right now.
Okay. I had a rather stressful beginning to my week. do a little plug for my store here. I'm not allowed to really advertise very much, but I used to work part-time at this liquor store, and eventually I liked the work so much I end up buying the store. It's kind of, they used to have a commercial like that. I think I liked the company so much I bought it. And that's kind of like how it was. Only you can't just put up your money and buy it. You have to qualify. The state has to accept you as an agent to sell their product because we're selling their product and the alcohol we sell here. It's not really a free market system in Oregon. There are many controlled states in the United States, and Oregon's one of them. And they take that control part of their description of their the Oregon Liquor Control Commission very seriously. And it's not all negative. They're trying to keep liquor out of the hands of minors. They're trying to keep drunks from being served too much, keep drunk drivers off the road. I mean, they're trying to be responsible in as much as they can. They admit they're not going to be 100% any place. But in the meantime, I have this business that I purchased, and I saw that there was an excellent opportunity to increase the volume and profitability of the business by expanding into wine and beer, which is now available for hard liquor stores in Oregon. It hasn't been until just the last few years. And so I wanted to do that. And to do this, you have to get permission, which is kind of just that fact alone is kind of disgusting that you have to have permission to work. To me, that's something that only occurs in communist countries. But lo and behold, it's here. So we had to get permission from the state, which was, they actually want the stores to do this because they're trying to move to more market economies, trying to move in that direction. They actually, the people at the OLCC are pretty reasonable people. And in the time that they've had control of liquor in Oregon, it has moved quite a bit away from a severely controlled environment to one that's at least a lot more consumer friendly. And I think eventually we'll have a lot more competition in the marketplace, a natural competition. Not, they kind of set up a system where it's hard to lose as a store owner, because you have a, you don't have too many stores around you to compete with you. So you're the only game in that section of town, more or less. And for every so many thousand people, they put another store in. So if the population grows, you're not going to grow with it very long before they put another store there. And then you're back to, you got to go back a couple steps if you want to grow. Well, expanding into offering beer and wine was a really good way for me to grow without having to worry about competition, because the other stores in Medford really don't. One of them has the ability to do that in the future, but he's holding off until he has the capital to do it, which I think is probably a smart move. The other two really don't have a situation where it's going to be easy for them to do that in the near future. So I thought, wow, this will allow me to have the people that would want to be able to shop in one place, allow me to be the first one into that market, and I maybe can capture a larger share and I can make more money. Well, the OLCC granted my permission, and that was kind of a rubber stamp, but it's a provisional conditional approval, which means that the city of Medford also has to grant approval. And this is where the comedy of errors begins. Well, the first thing I realized is that the business license that I inherited when I bought this store was for the prior owner's business. And it, because his business name was also the name of his LLC, it wasn't a name that I could assume. So I had to go down and get the business re-registered in the name that I had my business under, which to me is, it's a way for them to rip you off, steal $100 from me.
So did you change the name of the store?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay.
By the way, for those of you in the Medford area, it's now called Spirits World. We have a, we're gonna have a, by the time we have the whole rollout for beer and wine, we'll have a full media blitz of what, as much as we're allowed to do anyway. We'll have Facebook and a webpage, and we'll have we can do a little bit more for the wine and beer than we can for the hard alcohol. We're pretty restricted on that, but for the stuff that we own ourselves, we can do whatever we want, pretty much like a normal store. Anyway, so I sense a question possibly.
Oh, well, hold on. I'm getting tangled up in my cord here. No, I was just curious if you changed the name of the store and just that I was just thinking about the DBA doing business as name and all this kind of stuff and the city's reasoning behind it.
The reason I had to do it is the name of the store, the previous store, was also the name of the previous owner's LLC.
Yes, yes.
I couldn't assume that name because
you didn't purchase his LLC.
No,
right?
I just purchased this store.
You purchased like inventory and then also the right to have the license with the OL to sell liquor if the OLCC approved you,
yeah,
and all that kind of business.
Yeah, and they had already approved me because I can't purchase it until they approve me. So
right.
And that was all done.
Right.
So the city of Medford, even though they have four of these stores operating within their city limits, they don't have a clue as to what the law is regarding these stores. And they were not going to issue me a license to sell, to operate my store, even though it's been operating as a liquor store for, I don't know, 40 years. I don't know how long. It's been a long time. Ever since I can remember, there's been a liquor store in this center here. Anyway, they weren't going to issue a license because they said, you shouldn't be here without this. And I said, well, I think I'm licensed by the OLC. I signed a contract with them and everything. I think they're approving of it. And I don't think that you guys have jurisdiction over this matter.
Yeah, but you're doing business in Medford. I actually have a friend who went to jail because he hadn't paid his business license fee Medford. He went to jail for it.
I don't know exactly what the conversation is that they had on the phone. The OLCC called the city the next day because I had mentioned something to my agent, the other guy that kind of is my he kind of looks after the different stores in the Southern Oregon region. I told him, I says, well, I'm having a little problem with the city license. I hope, I know, they said it'll get cleared up, but I don't know. It's, they seemed like really confused. So they said I didn't have a license to operate. The OCC, I think this conversation was something like this. Hello, is this City of Medford Business Office? Yes, this is the OLCC. And we just wanted to remind you, the City of Medford gets millions of dollars from the OLCC every year. And if you close down this store, you're not going to get a dime. And so they said, oh, well, no, this is our city. You don't have any right to tell us what to do. And they says, no, this is our alcohol. This is our store. If you want to get a share of the proceeds, you're going to allow this business to operate. You don't have authority to license this. We're in charge of this in the state. The legislature's given us this authority. And it says, back off. So the next day I got a call from the city. And they said, yeah, you're okay. You're good. And so I got my business license. And then I have to get a separate license to have authorization to sell beer and wine, which is just another excuse to steal $100 from you.
So basically the City of Medford was trying to deal with you like how they would deal with a bar that was opening up, which means, yes. I mean, the bar has to be authorized by the OLCC, and the city has to have their say, because if they have problems, if the cops get called out all the time, like, oh, that place shenanigans a while back, you know, the cops would just line up for blocks at closing time and then just bust people like crazy.
They had a lot of things they were doing there that were really shouldn't be done. They weren't responsible actions for a business owner thing.
Oh no. I mean, I was there one night and I for a battle of the bands kind of a thing. I saw a security guard, a shenanigans security guard, choke a guy out just right there, right before my eyes. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Anyway, yeah, getting you off topic here. Sorry.
That's the reason. There's a good reason why they're not in business. They weren't really responsible about this stuff. Anyway, so we have to clear the same kinds of hurdles that a bar or restaurant would have to hurdle in terms of beer and wine.
Right.
And so we had to have a floor plan of the thing. We have to have And at this time, I just had a kind of a rough idea of what I wanted. I said, well, this isn't going to be real detailed, but, you know, we're not serving anything other than sealed bottles. It's like, you know, it's like a 7-Eleven would, you know, like, do you need the layout of a 7-Eleven? It says, actually, we do. So I said, okay, I'll do it. So I made out a little diagram and everything, and I brought it in. And then that's when all the problems started. It seems that my diagram, the dimensions that I gave him, didn't match up with what they had on file, which wasn't
So that means that improvements were made without permits.
Yes, prior to my taking.
So now the building official, the building inspector, is involved now.
Well, not yet, but he's not. He's kind of like a go-between. He's the planning department. He's not really building inspection.
You might have building inspection, the electrical inspector, the plumbing inspector.
That part's okay. The planning department has to make sure that you don't have too much foot traffic or whatever that you're an approved use for that zoning or whatever. There's a lot of things they have to do, but regardless of the thing, he was just really confused because, well, you're saying you have almost 2,800 square feet, and you're going to be expanding into this, and it's going to give you another 500 square feet. So we show that your store should be 1,400 square feet, and we show this whole center is approved for only stores up to 1,400 square feet. And I said, sitting on the phone to him, I said, I don't know if you guys don't get out of the office much, but maybe you should start walking around town. There isn't a single store in the center that's under 1,400 square feet. They're all way over that. They've all been making improvements. They've all been taking extra. In fact, there was two consignment stores on the end of the thing that they had an empty space between them, and they split it up between them and made adjustments in their rent to their landlord and whatever. And so they went from 1,400 square feet each to about 2,000 square feet each, or 2,100 square feet each. And, you know, that's how it is. And so, you know, that's maybe you should come out and take a look at this stuff. And they said, well, I don't know. And they're just scratching their head. And I don't know what we can do. And they're making it sound like I wasn't going to get approved. And I started to get really mad because I think this is going to be a very profitable venture to be able to expand into this. It's going to basically, this is a space I'm already renting. I'm not going to have very much additional overhead, maybe an additional employee, but that's only if there are sales to support it. So, it's really going to be hard to fail at this. I think it's going to provide somewhere between $4,000 and $8,000 of profit a month. I'm not sure exactly how much foot traffic I'm going to get or what kind of sales going to be, but that's my estimate. And I'm getting kind of upset because I'm seeing this stream of money, which is considerable. This is after all expenses, because there aren't going to be very many. It's just going to disappear, and literally taking away that source of funding. So I'm kind of calling up to complain yesterday, and the guy that I needed to talk to, I had been talking to, wasn't there. I don't know if he was avoiding my phone call or if he was really out doing some work or something. I'm not going to question. I'm going to assume that he was doing work, because he actually has been a reasonable person to talk to. But he had a real problem. I know that. And that nothing that he had on anything they had on file matched up with anything that I was giving him. And he was just trying to figure out what was going on. And I've been trying to feed him information, but you know, that it just makes them more confused. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I ended up talking with the head of that department, and she is married to a really good friend of mine. I know her, not professionally, and she's a very nice person, but I'm not in a very good mood at this point. I'm laughing now, but I was not laughing yesterday. And I started off and I said, listen, I'm feeling really kind of upset about this, and I'm not upset at you personally, unless you're causing this. I don't think you are, but it's a frustrating situation. I don't think that people are getting to the source of the problem, because it seems to be worse every time I talk to somebody. But maybe they're getting closer because it's getting worse. I don't know. And I tried to explain to her what's the deal going on. She says, well, Chuck, this is, you should have checked all this stuff out before you bought this store.
Oh, give me a break.
And I say, so this is all my responsibility to know the status of all these buildings and whether the city of Medford has up-to-date plans on this whole building before I
That's ridiculous. No way.
I said, well, what's your excuse for not having up-to-date plans? And she says, so, well, listen, if you're going to become abusive, and says, I'm not becoming abusive. I'm just trying to turn your question back on you. That's the same question you asked me. She says, well, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to solve this problem. And she softened quite a bit, because we know each other. So it's not like we're enemies. And so she listened to what I had to say.
This is totally absurd, though. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It is. But she could. I think she understood that I felt like I'm being punished for what other people have done. I'm trying to do things the way they want it done. I'm going there,
right. And they don't own the building. You don't even own the building. You didn't buy the building. Somebody else owns it. Actually, it was the owner's responsibility before they leased it to you to sort that stuff out.
Yes, and I don't think that they realize that there's an – and the reason they have to do this, just so you people that are listening will understand, and I think this is quasi-reasonable. I don't think that's a bad reason why they're doing it. But they need to have correct addressing for emergency response and things like that, fires, police, ambulance, you know. And somebody's life could depend on it. Someone goes to the wrong address because they don't have the right things in file. And so the city has to have that information up to date. But that is not my responsibility.
Right.
My responsibility is only, it ends at, you know, the property that I'm leasing. And I was trying to point out to them, I think it's kind of their responsibility to keep their records up. And I shouldn't have to pay the price or pay any price, including losing business opportunity, while they scramble to get this. I think they could go ahead and approve what I'm doing, because they're going to get this figured out. And you know, they could do it conditionally. And I could start at my own risk to start to do stuff, and they could revoke it. And I would say, well, I agreed to that. I'm going to have to stick with that. But they said, no, we can't do that. And I said, okay, well, if you can't, you can't. Because they thought it'd be some legal problems. I said, well, how long is it going to take? I said, we don't know. And I said, well, I just hope you know that. And I kind of tried to lay it out. I just said on the air, this is going to put about $4,000, $8,000 in my pocket every month. That's a considerable amount of money. That's more than I'm making now. It's in addition to what you make in the hard liquor store, and I have some other sources of income. So it's still a significant portion of my income, even with all that other. So I'm going to be pretty flush for a while. And Miner Dave, don't be hitting me up for dough. Although I really want to say this, Miner Dave, if anybody deserves your support, he's the guy. He's current news, he gave me a news flash this week. His case is being considered by Supreme Court now.
He'd like us to pull him on tonight if we have time.
Well, we probably will. He can talk about that. But so anyway, we get to this point, and I've kind of been able to air what my problems are with it. And I says, what I'm looking for is I'm looking for a government in the city of Medford that is going to try and help me instead of put barriers in my way. And I think maybe that got through to them or something. They said, well, yeah, that really should be our goal, our philosophy.
Yeah,
our
really?
Statement. And I says, I haven't tried to go around you by not getting permits or licenses or anything else. I don't necessarily agree with all these things, but I'm doing them because to not do them causes more problems than doing them.
By the way, I find Medford to be so tyrannical that I refuse to ever open a business in Medford ever again.
Never, I may not do
never.
It.
I won't do it.
One. Except this story has a kind of it isn't over yet, but today's outcome gave me hope.
Yeah, I own property in that town, and I just it's always had a bad culture as far as how the city interfaces with small business. I don't know where it comes from.
I think it's how they interface with everybody here. To give the listeners that don't live here a sample, they have wanted to put a water park in Medford for quite a while. It's quite hot here in the summer, but the rest of the year it's not that hot. But for maybe 2 months, it's pretty hot. So they wanted to put this water park here, and they put up for bond measures, you know, to raise property taxes. I think they did it 3 times and it went down in flames every time. It was 2-1, 4-1. It was just, there was no support for it, but they were not going to be denied on their quest to have a water park because it's part of their plan for Medford, Oregon. And so they just added a fee to our water bill by a vote of the city council. And they said that that was legitimate because those were elected representatives of the people. And I think that those elected representatives need to all be fired. So if one of your city council members is still in office and they voted for this piece of crap thing to put the thing on your water commission bill, you should vote them out of office. You should vote in a garbage can before you have that person. I mean, you could just write in the name of anybody in the phone book and it would be better than the person that's representing you. They didn't represent your vote at all in the 3 bond measures that were tried to be floated. So that's the kind of city we have. They are very much tyrants in a lot of respects.
Well, yeah, and I've told this story before, but they jacked around with me really hard back in the early 1990s when I had a business downtown. All I did was they were rebuilding the bridge on East Main Street, and it was hurting my business. So I moved from one junky old building a few blocks away to another junky old building, and they sent me a bill for, it was like $4,000 worth of street system development charges payable in 10 days. And I was 21 years old at the time, and they just wanted me to, like, I was some rich guy and I was just gonna like come up with this money and give it to him, and I fought them on it, and it was a brand new law. I was the first business to have it applied to, and turned out that other people in the business community had a problem with this law too, and I had the support of the local businesses and the Chamber of Commerce, and there was a big city council meeting to talk about this, and they changed the law. And I didn't have to pay anything. So, but it was close. I was getting threatened all the time.
Hardball.
Yeah. I can't remember if they revoked my license, my business license. They were threatening to. It was not good. The city attorney told a friend of mine who was a judge, to tell Drew Lamb to, pay up, he's screwed, and he was wrong. I didn't have to pay anything, so yeah. It pays to stand your ground, you know, and to fight now, these people.
Now to make it, like I said, the happy turn in this was that the person who I said I was having fairly decent conversations with, he finally came over to this morning. He came to this center and he walked through it, and he understands what the deal is now. I mean, he could see it, and he goes, oh wow, there's been a lot done here. And we don't have any updates at all.
We got to red tag everything.
Well, No, he wasn't. He doesn't do any of that. He said, we're going to have to update our records and reflect what the actual is. I don't think there's any problems here. He said, there is going to be one problem with yours, however. These are two lots, and the actual western wall of your business is the property line, and can't tear that down because it's without house changing the status of these lots. So you're going to have to conjoin the two lots into one lot, which is just a legal thing. But the owner of the property is going to have to do that. And I said, oh, great. And he says, don't worry. It's not hard to do, and it's not expensive. I don't think it's going to cost anything, really, just, unless they have to pay a lawyer or something. But I think they probably have a form. They're leasing agents. They know the legal how to do it. And in fact, our leasing agent that leased it to us called us and said, don't worry, we'll take care of it. So it looks like it's going to be all taken care of. It's just a matter of time. It's going to stretch it out there, and I'm probably going to lose about $48,000 worth of income at some, it's either the first month might not be that much, but at some point in time, so many months down the road, that's what's going to be every month. And I'm just delaying that time by a month. So I'm still technically out some money, although it's
Yeah,
money that I may or may not ever get.
technically your landlord owes you that. They it sounds like they entered into a contract of an illegal purpose with you. And so you
I'm
have
not
some
I'm
you
not going to press it with them because
have
the town has been very cooperative in everything I've tried to do here, and they really would like me to succeed. They're very nice people, and they're really are, they try and do everything they can to without spending tons of money on my behalf, but they try and make things easy for me. And so I appreciate that. I don't want to make things hard for them. But anyway, and also the tone of the guy that was contacting me today was, even though he was, reasonable before, it was much different today. So I think my words had some impact on the people, the person in charge of that department at City of Medford, and that it filtered down to him that, hey, we're here to serve the people, and we have to do things that they feel that we're on their side. Even if it's not something that's great for them, we're going to find a way to make their, if we have no objection to what they're doing, we're going to find a way to make this happen for them or in the in a convenient way as fast as we can. And I've had a feeling that that was kind of the direction they were going. And so I will report on this every week until it's finished. But I think that it's moving in the right direction. I was happy that my city was kind of, they made a response to my complaint. And for now, I'm satisfied. I feel much better today than I did yesterday. Yesterday I was pretty grumpy. But today I got a smile on my face, so.
Excellent. Yeah, I have to go to a city planning commission meeting next week in a different city, so that a church can get a conditional use permit to open up. This is the third time I've done this in that town, and it's incredible. I can't believe this is going on. These churches have to pay a $2,500 fee, jump through a bazillion hoops in order to get permission to operate.
If someone wanted to open like a strip club 2 blocks from the high school, they could probably do it.
That would be a lot easier, actually. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't
Yeah.
want to deny someone's ability to free speech by taking off their clothes.
Yeah, well, we're far from free around here. I mean, this state, the as far as the state is concerned, everything's a privilege. Everything's a privilege. So,
Yeah.
you have to ask permission for everything, get a license for everything. You know,
And you listen to someone who supposedly is a freedom-minded individual, and I'm gonna call him out a little bit, like Lars Larson. He supports all that. He thinks that, yeah, businesses should be heavily taxed for the privilege of doing business in a city. And he thinks all those taxes they put on businesses are legitimate, even though businesses are, and but when it's a business that's closer to his home or affects him personally, then maybe it isn't a good tax in that case. But he doesn't. He thinks that things like driving licenses and all the different ways that government extorts money out of you are all legitimate because it's the privilege of living in the United States, the privilege of living in Oregon, the privilege of living in Medford, Oregon, and you have to. There's a value to that, and
Well,
that's
this is what I have to say to Lars Larson. You know, if you like totalitarianism so much, then why don't you move to North Korea? You know, just go there. You'll have all
Cuba.
of it that you could ever want.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
You can. You can. All those licenses will support all those businesses. Yeah, it'll be great. The privilege of living in Venezuela. Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of his. I don't really like to listen to him anymore, just because every time I do, I get so mad and upset. And he thinks he's a conservative freedom fighter. That's
Oh.
the sad part.
He's a statist.
He's more than a statist. He's a tyrant in a freedom's cloak. He's put a freedom cloak around himself. Says, see, I'm for freedom. But there's a status underneath that cloak.
No, it's just disgusting, you know. The thing is that this keeps going on because people just allow it to. They give their consent. They go along with it, and you know, until you stop complying and just look at your privileges as rights. And act as if they're rights, and stop asking the state for permission to do things, and then put those privileges at risk, and even lose those privileges, but still act upon them as rights. Until you do that, you have no idea what it is to be free. You have no concept of freedom.
And
And
sometimes that price can be kind of high to be free, can
yeah,
it?
absolutely. The
Yeah.
risks are extraordinarily high, and but you don't you can't even comprehend the level of tyranny that you're living under until you start putting those privileges at risk, and you'll realize the tyranny is massive, and we're under some heavy tyranny here, and I don't know if it's going to get better, Chuck. You know, I've been reading a lot of Lysander Spooner lately, and you know, and he did most of his work in the 1860s, writing about things that we talk about every week,
He
and
went
think,
from 1830 on, didn't he?
yeah,
Yeah.
and things have just gotten worse. It's just getting worse and worse and worse, and here we are, just deep into this.
Yeah, it's, you know what, these places like well, like Travis is interested in Chile and Fort Galt, places like that are becoming more and more attractive
But they're not
because,
like if you look at you go and
well,
you look at Chile,
there's still
and
problems,
you,
but
but you still, you know, you still have to have licenses for so many things. You still have status, and there's still government to deal with, you know. And you know, really, what you got to do if you're going to try to find a place to go to, you know, you need to look at things like, do I have to have a license to drive? Do I have to have a license to open a business? Do I have to have a professional license to engage in a trade? These are all things you need to look at, all of the things that the state considers a privilege, and flesh those things out. I don't even know if Joel Skousen has dug into this. You know, I have his book, Strategic Relocation, and he breaks down all these places. But you know, he looks at like regulation and corruption and things like that. And the United States is pretty high on that list. But if you really want to drill down to the nuts and bolts of freedom, can you go to point A to point B without having to show papers? You know, can you do that? In most places in the whole world, you can't do that. You know, you're required to have some form of papers on your person, and operate a business, you know, and there's almost always some sort of taxation involved, and I mean, it has, you know, turned into a massive prison planet, you know, not to you know, imitate Alex Jones here, but seriously, I mean, that's what we're looking at. I mean, just look around, just get on Google and or whatever, and look around and try to find a place where you don't have to have those things to exist. And I don't think you'll be able to find a place. You know, if you do, let me know.
Well,
But
I think that perpetual tourist might work for a while until enough people start doing it that the government start cracking down on tourists,
yeah.
because they tend to give tourists a little. They like the money they bring in, just because they spend there, even though they don't produce anything. They think it's like a godsend to the country for the money they bring for goods and services. And so you can do your business in a country where you don't really have to face immediate consequences for any violations you have. You say, well, go ahead, nationalize my business, take it. This is, you're going to just run in the ground, you'll lose all that. Says, all right, good, keep it and run it, and we could find an agreement here we could both live with, but you might still be able to gain an income out of that. Or you could just pack up your business and move it to another country where they have better tax laws and things. Simon Black writes about that a lot. There's places around the world where the corporate tax rates are half what they are in the United States, if not lower. Estonia, a former communist country, their top marginal corporate tax rate is 20%. That's just
yeah, but it's still greater than zero.
It's still greater than zero, but there's more economic freedom with a lower tax rate than there is with a higher tax rate. And if a country ever decides to go no taxes, like the United States used to be no taxes before
1913. Yep.
Yeah. And that's why United States, everybody, we had immigration problems then. Like, you can't believe everybody wanted to come here because they could work and own everything they produced. But you know what? They didn't have any socialism, and they didn't have any welfare, and they didn't have public school systems that they have today that just milk money out of people. And so those immigrants that came here, they produced a lot of wealth for this country. Now, that's what made America great. One of the things, if we would reverse the social welfare state, if we reverse the public school system, reverse the income taxes, reverse the things that make this into a tyranny, all those immigrants flooding across the border would also make America great, because they would either work and produce something or they would starve. And so I'm sure that they, faced with those alternatives, they would work. But when they don't have to, when they can live better than they lived in Mexico or Guatemala or wherever they came from, why should they stress out too much about working?
Right. Most people don't. You know, I've had people that worked for me, and I try to get them to work more hours because I had the work available, and they were complaining they needed more money, and then they don't make themselves available for the time, and then I get a call on the phone, and they've applied for food stamps, you know, and it's like, well, why work when you could get all this stuff for free? You know, and this happened with young people. You know, I had a kid that was working for me. He was 18 years old, totally healthy. You know, he should be a producer. He should be there working and stuff. But instead, he's collecting food stamps because he didn't want to work more than 8 hours a week. I mean, that's disgusting. He shouldn't have qualified. He shouldn't have qualified. I told them, I said, I've got 40 hours work for this guy. He's got plenty of work. He'll make good money. You know, he's fine. It didn't matter. They gave him food stamps. So the system is making people dependent. And it's a vicious circle. This is how we skid into socialism. You know, they don't want people like you and me out there creating things.
I think part of it is they want a voting block.
Right. And that's why Governor Kate Brownstein, you know, got her law passed. You know, she becomes governor, and oh, there we go. We got the motor voter thing. You know, so now you go to get a driver's license, you're automatically registered to vote. And then Obama's talking about making it mandatory to vote. This is pretty disgusting. This is tyranny.
It is. So I wonder if they're going to, if it's mandatory that you vote, then if you turn in an empty ballot, if they will know it was your ballot.
Oh, I bet that they say you have to make a selection. You know, like
you can't write in anybody's name.
I
a real person.
I think you have to select the choices given. And
so it's pretty much like they had in the communist.
Well, Australia does this. I was just I shared an article on my Facebook last night that Brandon Turbeville had written about this. You know, in Australia, you know, it's mandatory to vote, and if you don't vote, you're fined, and if you continue to not vote, you're imprisoned. And you know, the way that Brandon laid it out was, yeah, well, here are your choices: CFR member A or CFR member B. Pick one.
And because you've consented to whatever they do by voting, and you've consented to the system, then any level of tyranny we put on you, we say, well, you voted for it.
That's the thing. As soon as you do anything in this system, you've given consent for them to do whatever. You know, as soon as you do anything, you know, you sign up for something, you get a license for something. As soon as you do that, you've consented. you know,
And
and there you go.
if I didn't, if I hadn't made these people feel really embarrassed by just calling them on the bullshit they were doing, says, you know, who are you serving? You're serving me, the one that pays your salary, or are you serving somebody else that's trying to get you to do their agenda? And says, you know, do you want your kids to grow up in this? If I hadn't had that kind of, I didn't say those exact words, but if I hadn't had that kind of attitude toward it, they would have, you know, I would not have had any progress in my case. Because
Well,
I can still appeal to their common sense a little bit on a local level, somebody that I knew, who
what?
personally knew me. That's the only reason I had any progress on this. And I still vowed as of yesterday that when my lease, my term of my lease is up, I'm probably going to sell this store and just and go to South America somewhere or some, maybe I'll just live on a boat in the ocean. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think what we need to do is you know, get groups of like-minded people organized and get people to engage and trade with one another, you know, voluntary communities where people are engaging in trade, providing mutual support, providing defense against the statist. And we have to withdraw from this system, withhold our consent, organize, you know, among like minds, and we have to create a better, more competitive system than this current system. It's the only way, and there's no gradual way. We're this the tyranny is just like coming on, just, you know, it's like a tidal wave of tyranny right now, and so this isn't something that we just do gradually. This is going to have to be like swiftly, nonviolently, of course, but until the statists act out, because the state only knows violence. But
Can you imagine what would happen if they had an election and it was announced that candidate A won by 62%, but that result is being contested because there are no actual ballots that were cast.
right.
No one voted. That's kind of the punchline to the keynote speech in Acapulco.
Right.
That was an awesome video. I don't, we posted it earlier this week on our Facebook page, and you guys should check it out because it's an awesome speech the guy gives.
Well, it's like Doug Casey says, you know, there was an old saying, you know, what if they put on a war and nobody showed up? Well, what if they held an election and nobody voted?
Yeah, and he said then the next thing that happened that was really a shock is that April 15th came around and no one paid their taxes.
Right, exactly. You know, and the anti-media are talking about a tax strike. You know, but the thing with the young kids, you know, their heart's in the right place, but they're kind of in this position of fear where, well, okay, well, I'll do it if you do it. Okay, well, I'll do it. You know, and it's not going to work like that. You have to.
I wish I had your courage, Drew.
Well,
You're a braver man than I am.
we have to change things, and by buying ammo. For your enemy, is not going to save your life, you know. So I shared today a meme from the Mises Institute, and it was a quote from Frank Chodorov, and
Excuse me for the phone ringing.
oh, it's okay. Chodorov said, "The proposal to quit voting is basically revolutionary. It amounts to a shifting of power from one group to another, which is the essence of revolution. As soon as the non-voting movement got up to steam, the politicians would most assuredly start a counter-revolution. Measures to enforce voting would be instituted, fines would be imposed for violations, and prison sentences would be meted." And you know, and the, and that's what we're that's I mean that's what's happening in Australia. And that's what's going to happen here, you know.
When he said that, people laughed at him as a fool.
And
I mean, who would ever think 40? He was, this was in the 50s, he said that, wasn't it?
I
Who would
think
have
so.
thought? Who would have thought that possible in the 50s? And here we are.
Right. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if Obama implemented an executive order and said voting's mandatory. I bet it's going to happen. You got to vote. And I think Oregon will be, the first to do it if there's not an executive order. Governor Brownstein will say, yes, it's mandatory vote.
Said, is it? It's Governor Brownstein.
Governor Kate Brownstein. Yes.
Yeah, Browns, as in a brown stain. She's like
Yes, exactly.
full of brown matter.
Yes, exactly.
That's what I thought you said. I want everybody else to make sure that they realize that.
Yes, I made that up. Yes. Yes.
I think it's brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's I don't know, it's a little crude, but that's how I feel.
I think that's.
This person was the Secretary of State, which is the nexus of tyranny that is imposed on businesses in Oregon.
Yeah.
She's headed up for years. Now she's the governor because Oregon had a little too much corruption, or not corruption in the right places.
Yeah, they can deal with a certain level of corruption, but when the governor is giving special business favors to his prostitute, then that they draw the line there. Well, that's unacceptable.
It didn't look good. It didn't look good for the party,
It's just we can't have that. It's okay if you take bribes
Well, and Kitzhaber, he was just too heterosexual, I mean, really, he's just not hip enough with the Portland crowd,
Yeah, and I think that probably the linchpin was that his prostitute was not available for comment because she was vacationing in Europe. Money she got as a lobbyist.
Well, I think this is just the beginning here in Oregon, So, I mean, there has to be what there has to be a vote
Actually, the
for
beginning was when they passed LDC,
LCDC.
LCDC. Yeah,
Yeah.
that was the beginning of
Yeah, true. Yeah. That was quite a while ago, that governs land use in Oregon.
it was in the 70s.
Yeah, it's a framework for land use and zoning.
What that did is it took a place where you could, Oregon before that time was a place where you could go out and you could buy, like a 10 acres spread at somebody's small farm, split it into 2 5-acre parcels, sell off the other 5-acre parcel for enough to pay for what the whole thing, and put a mobile home on it and live almost tax free, without having to. You could work 6 months out of the year as a doing something, and then you could hunt and fish the other 6 months. I mean, a lot of people just live like that.
Yeah.
And what's wrong with that? They weren't a burden
Nothing.
on society.
No. No. Now you have to ask permission for everything. I can't believe you have to have a license to fish. That's ridiculous. And I mean, I had to get a license to transport fish to my farm. I have to get a permit every time I want to transfer fish, live fish. Yeah.
A permit to transmit live fish. I mean, you're like,
It's absurd. It's ridiculous. It's just like that movie Brazil.
it
We've
is.
gotten to that point. If you own a business, you get it. If you don't own a business, you don't understand. You're just not going to understand. And that's another problem. There's just a minority of us are business owners. We're the ones that are supposed to be creating the jobs out there, except for government,
I don't know if we're getting a different level of consumer here, or more and more people are waking up every day, but I think it's probably 2 to 1 people who come into the store that really have a serious gripe with how things are going. And they're all getting closer and closer to the absolute truth. I mean, I had someone the other day that before I could bring it up told me 9/11 is the source of the current problem. I'm going, that was my next line. So I think it's starting. I think they're, despite all the things they're doing, I think they're really losing the intellectual battle. Whether that's going to make a difference, that remains to be seen. But people are waking up a lot faster now because it's starting to really hit home. We had another person, death by cop, in Medford.
Just the other day.
And they did their best. I don't know if they've reacted like the New York police have done and gone in and changed the Wikipedia references to this person, and so they could justify their shooting, more readily, get public support for their actions. But I just think people who are mentally challenged, that are having serious problems, there's schizophrenics or whatever, I don't think that should be a death necessarily a death penalty. And you can solve these situations by just waiting them out till they get hungry and tired.
Yeah, well, I saw a video recently that was I don't know if it might have been out of Australia. It was a mailman on his route, and he was showing all the dogs that he encounters, and some of them aren't too friendly, and he didn't have to shoot any of them. He didn't kill a single dog, even the mean ones, and he has to do this every single day, you know, and the same dogs, but in the United States they just shoot the dogs, you know, and other animals, you know. I see stuff
dogs,
where they shoot.
Dogs
shoot.
More, what I understand these stories do, they're not really aggressive so much as they are just barking.
Yeah. Well, I consider my dog sentient. You know, my dog's a sentient being, and she's like a 3-year-old child with really sharp teeth and a scary bark.
And she likes to chase toys.
Yeah. But
she's like a child, she's very childlike.
Yeah, but you know, she's not menacing to the point that she ought to be shot. But you know, I've seen just video after video of cops shooting dogs. It's just it's completely bizarre that all this is going on. You know, it's just this. You know, we've just skidded into a totalitarian police state, and I don't know if we could turn this around or not. You know, it's just we've just got to get more people saying enough is enough. You know, it's time to try something different. You know, you and I promote anarcho-capitalism, voluntarism, agorism. You know, and people go, well, show me an example of where this has worked someplace. Well, I don't have to. This current system that you worship has failed. It's completely failed. It's horrible. It's hell. You don't want to try something different?
It would be hard to be worse than this.
What do we have to lose? Let's try something different. Let's do something different. Come on.
I can give you just two ideas right off the top of my head. I'm currently reading a book called The Invisible Hook. It's about the economics of pirates. And it's awesome, awesome book. Do you know that pirates had representative governments and basically it was about 100. They predated our Declaration of Independence by over 100 years, and they had a much better Declaration of Independence. It was more speaking to the rights of men to be, you know, as natural rights, and it was more complete. Maybe not as eloquently stated. But in terms of what they actually said, it was a better document. It was almost all the what you would call the democratic governments of the world were copies of the pirate system. So that was the first anarchy, and it worked quite well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Until the countries started trying to hunt them down, and they had to they actually began as government. As country-sponsored privateers, they were given a commission to go out and harass the ships of other countries. And when the warfare would die down, then they would have all these resources to do this, and they wouldn't have anybody to plunder anymore. But I'm not going to defend them for, as I think, private property is still kind of sacrosanct, but they recognize that among themselves. I mean, it's an interesting book that – I recommend it to all you people to read it. It's
The Invisible Hook. I just love the name. That's just an awesome name.
It is.
Absolutely brilliant. Who's the author of that book?
His name is Peter Leeson. Uh-huh. And he's been a guest on the Tom Woods radio show. You can go to Woods podcast, and you could do a search for that, and it'll come up with the episode that he was on there. And he's a real interesting interview. That's where I heard about the book, and I ordered it. Hmm. And
I'll have to borrow that from you when I'm done with the hemp book. Done with the hemp book.
It's the other thing is there's an area in it's kind of in the foothills of the Himalayas.
Hey, we have a call coming in here. I'm gonna patch him in. Hey caller, you're on Double Cross Radio. We are live. Caller, hello, are you there? Nope, nobody there. Maybe they're shy.
Well, there was in this area, it's kind of a south Southeast Asia area, in these highland things. They're really an area that's contained in the borders of maybe four or five countries, but they don't recognize any of those countries' authority over their actions, and they're kind of an anarchy system, and they survive, whatever. They have a very peaceful existence, very happy. I wouldn't necessarily say they're in the 21st century in all respects. They probably don't have any cell phones, but I don't think that's what they're after in life. They have what they need to survive. I think anytime you encounter a black market, you're looking at an anarchy. And before you start saying, oh, black markets, those are criminal things, I want you to remember that our country was founded and financed. The revolution that freed us from Britain was financed by black market people and black market operations. So just be careful where you're striding there. Black market operations always arise when government exerts too much control, and they take away things from people that they really want. They tried it with prohibition alcohol in the 30s and caused a lot of crime to develop. They tried it with marijuana that caused a lot of crime to develop. I just black markets are free market activities. They're anarchy that works. And they're really drug dealers are not necessarily criminals and violence. They arm themselves to protect themselves from the state, just like the pirates did. There's lots and lots of examples if you want to look and find them.
Yeah.
You know what, our guest last week, Travis Boyd, what he was doing was really, he was drawn to that industry because there was almost no regulation. It was almost an anarchy in the marketplace. Any marketplace is like that.
Right.
And what did he do? He made agreements with his customers. He made agreements with people to put relay things on their buildings and they get free service. He made agreements to get everything he needed and put it all together. And that's how free markets and anarchy works. Everything's voluntary. It's all by mutual consent. It's very peaceful.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I want to expand my community of anarcho-capitalists, and we can create agorist communities, trade freely amongst ourselves, live well, and be happy.
I think you're right on.